And that was Les Dawson back in 1981. And he'll be tickling the ivories next week, same time, along with more Dole Office romance and tales of 1920s gangsters.
The digital station for comedy, drama and entertainment. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
And we'll go back another 10 years now. From August 1971, it looks like the bumbling men from the Ministry have goofed just once too often for Sir Gregory's liking, and he's about to take action.
Time to meet the men from the Ministry. We're about to go round in government circles with Norma Ronald, Ronald Baddeley, John Graham and the men from the Ministry, Richard Murdoch and Derek Giler. In the General Assistance Department, a small body of alert and efficient troubleshooters stand by to help any government department that's overloaded. Today we find Lamb and Lennox Brown tackling the problems of the post office.
The answer to this staff shortage is birds. Use carrier pigeons to deliver telegrams.
Would that work, do you think?
Yes, and if you crossed a pigeon with a woodpecker, mm-hmm. you'd have a bird that carried the message and knocked on the door when it got there.
Stroke of three, lovely cup of tea.
Ah, thank you, Mildred. Yes, put it on the bar billiard table there, would you?
Yeah. What's the matter with Mr. Lamb? He looks busy. Or is he having one of his turns?
We're making plans to streamline and modernise the post office.
Yes, we've been looking at the parcel post. Now, did you know that they have special codes for handling parcels?
No, I didn't know that.
If a parcel's labelled fragile, that means it can be dropped from a height not exceeding 6 feet.
Or perishable. That means it can be kept in the back of a post office van for not more than 3 months.
But we shall put a stop to all that.
How?
Uh-huh. We'll abolish the parcel post altogether.
Abolish the parcel post?
Mm-hmm.
But what will people do with their parcels?
Ah, now they'll still queue up at the post office. But when they get to the counter, they'll pay a pound and be lent a map and a pair of hiking boots.
Mr. Lamb.
Ah, that's my new invention, Mildred. It's a device for delivering tax demands to people who try to escape by living on yachts and houseboats.
Yeah, but what is it?
A torpedo. We're rather enjoying this job.
Oh, yes, and we were also asked to find new dialing services to increase telephone revenue.
There's to be a service for lonely people with hiccups.
Lonely people with hiccups?
Yes, they dial this number and a voice at the other end shouts, boo. Dial a shock, we call it.
And we've also started a dial a joke service.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
Oh, yes, oh, yes, yes. You see, if you're fed up, you dial this number and you hear a new joke every day.
I've collected lots from Christmas crackers. Listen to this one, Mildred. What are the Russians doing in Poland?
I don't know. What are the Russians doing in Poland?
Wait for it, Mildred. Oh, you're going to like this. They're holding up the telegraph wires.
Do what?
No, two. You've got it all. You've got it all wrong. That should be, what are the Poles doing in Russia?
Oh.
Holding up the telegraph wires.
Yes.
Oh, law.
Oh, you've heard it. Never mind, the others are even better.
That shouldn't be difficult.
This dial-a-joke service will be a winner.
We've put copies of all our post office work in this file, Mildred. Now, would you pop it over to Sir Gregory Pitkin's office, please?
Yes, sir. But he's not back from his weekend on the East Coast yet.
The East Coast? I hope he's taking something warm.
Yeah, Miss Bentwater from the typing pool.
It's one of his short weekends, Mildred. He's back on Thursday. And when he sees what we've done for the post office, I think he'll be quite excited.
Of all the blundering, half-witted lunacy, of all the bone-headed crass-stupidity. Come! Ah, Mr. Steele.
Good morning, Sir Gregory. Oh, you look upset. Nothing wrong, I trust?
There's a great deal wrong. Those idiots, Lamb and Lennox Brown, have created havoc.
Oh, dear.
Well, listen to this. They've made the suggestion for keeping dogs away from postmen. It's nonsense.
You mean it wouldn't work?
Well, it might work in theory, but how many postmen will be willing to keep a ferret up each trouser leg? The permanent Undersecretary Pitkin here. What? Hey, they've done what? I don't believe it. Who handled the job? Lennox, Brown and Lamb. I believe it. Just wait till I get my hands on them. I'll strangle them both personally. The post office people say Lennox, Brown and Lamb have started a dial-a-joke service.
Oh, not a bad idea.
In view of the number they chose, a very bad idea.
Really? Well, what number are they using?
Well, they thought they'd made up a new one. But by a horrible coincidence, they managed to hit on an existing private number at a house in Downing Street.
Oh. Not him?
Yes. People dialing the joke service are getting straight through to the Prime Minister.
Oh, dear me, how very unfortunate.
Oh, well, the dial-a-joke seems to work all right,
eh? Pity we haven't got hiccups. We could dial a shock as well. Should we try it, just for fun?
Why not? Why not? Let's have a nasty fright.
Lennox Brown!
That's the sort of thing.
Morning, Sir Gregory.
Hello, sir. I expect you're here to congratulate us. Did you like our post office work?
You incompetent, dunder-headed nitwits. You bird-brained, half-baked imbeciles.
Don't be evasive, Sir Gregory. Did you like it or not?
Silence! I understand it was you who organized this dial-a-joke service.
Yes, oh, yes, yes, that's right, sir. Yes, you may think it's rather frivolous, you know, but we felt it would be popular.
We tested it just now.
Oh, yeah, we laughed a lot, Sir Gregory. We did, you know. There was this chap, you see, impersonating the Prime Minister.
That was the Prime Minister.
Oh, glory.
The number you gave for this ludicrous project is the PM's private line. People keep ringing him up and asking him to say something funny.
Why don't they just go down and hear him in Parliament?
My colleague's trying to apologise, Sir Gregory. I mean, you know, and to say that, well, we all make mistakes, don't we?
The only mistake I made was letting you two run this department, but not anymore. There's to be a major command reshuffle.
Is that good news or bad news, Sir Gregory?
Don't speak to me, Lamb. Just don't speak to me, or I may do you a permanent mischief.
Thank you.
As I was saying, I'm appointing an overlord to run this office. You will continue in your present roles, but henceforth, Mr. Rodney Steele will be in charge.
In charge of us, Sir Gregory?
Yes, he'll stamp out inefficiency and get this place running properly. And if you don't like it, you can both put in for a transfer.
A transfer, Sir Gregory?
To archives at Ballymuckie.
Oh, but that's in the Outer Hebrides.
A population of 5 and 3 of them are sheep.
Don't fancy the idea, eh? Then you'd better buckle to and work under Mr. Steele. And remember, one more bungle from either of you, and it's first stop Ballymuckie.
I couldn't ring earlier, Bernard. It's not so easy now this blooming overlord's running the office. Oh, yeah, right pain in the elbow he is. Very smooth, he knows everything. He's got about 6 university degrees. What? No. All Mr. Lamb's got is that certificate from the Civil Service Garden Show. Yeah, second biggest cucumber. Well, of course he's upset. They both are, with his clever dick bossing them about. And the changes he's made in the office. OK, Bernard, I've got to go too. I'll see you at lunch. I don't know. From early dawn to set of sun, a typist's work is never done. Here we are, second cups all round.
Thank you, Mildred, thank you. Type out that stuff for Mr. Steele, will you? You know he likes everything done yesterday.
Righty-ho, sir.
Having Steele on our backs makes me nervous. I wish we could get rid of him.
Yes, but it won't be easy, you know. I found out today he's Sir Gregory's nephew.
So that's how he got the job.
That's it.
Just think, if Sir Gregory were my uncle, I'd be promoted too.
No work to do, Lamb?
Yes, Uncle Gregory. Mr. Gregory.
Good morning, Sir Gregory, Mr. Steele.
I'm here to brief you all on your next assignment. Now, Rodney, you know the purpose of the General Assistance Office?
Yes, sir. We exist to help any other department that's temporarily overstretched.
Exactly. Any department at all, except the post office. They've asked to be crossed off the list.
I can imagine.
Past efforts haven't always had happy results. But under your supervision, I'm sure future work will be faultless.
I entirely agree.
Good. You asleep, Lennox Brown?
No, I was just resting my eyes, Sir Gregory.
Well, pay attention. Your next jobs will be various MAD projects.
Oh, we've done some pretty mad ones in the past.
Lamb, MAD, Ministry of Aviation Development. Oh. I have a file here full of various tasks they want carried out as soon as possible.
Yes, well, just leave it to us, Sir Gregory.
Leave it to me, I think you mean.
Oh.
I dare say you two can make some small but useful contributions, like licking stamps and envelopes, but the guiding hand will be mine.
Well said, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Now, you see, the first item concerns Snedfield Airport, a new hangar for Britain's latest giant airliner. Here's the file with all the details.
Oh, thank you, sir. It will all be taken care of.
Good, good. And let me tell you something, Lennox Brown.
Oh, yes, Sir Gregory, yes.
For the first time in my life, I leave this office with confidence.
Confidence, Sir Gregory?
Confidence that your work will be done correctly. With Mr. Steele in command, I know that the ship won't sink.
Ship? I thought he said it was an aeroplane.
Oh. Right, Mr. Steele. Well, what's to be done, then?
Well, from a glance at these papers, it seems perfectly simple. A prefabricated hangar. It won't take me long, a few days, perhaps. We must have plans drawn up. Now, I've contacts who can do that by Friday.
We need an enormous hangar. It says here 100 yards long.
Yards, Mr. Lamb? Oh, please. That term is antiquated. You can convert those yards to meters for me.
Yes. Oh, yes, that's simple enough. Yes.
Of course. 1 meter equals 1.093614 yards.
It does? I mean, it does.
Yes.
Oh, it does, yes. Yes, well, now, let's see. Let's see. Now, of course, 100 goes into... carry three. two. This is rather more your line. You deal with it, will you?
Me? Well, I've lost the office pencil.
It's clear that you're both incapable of doing it.
Incapable? Now, yes. Look here, Mr. Steele. I haven't been in the civil service all these years for nothing.
Oh, my word. You mean the actually pay you? Give that to me, Mr. Lamb. I'll do it. There. That's the figure you want.
By Jove, if I weren't a gentleman, I'd hit him.
What was that?
I said meters do seem to be more fitting, yes.
I'm lunching with Sir Gregory at his club, so leave this hangar business for my attention this afternoon. I'll tie it up then.
Oh, very well, yes. Two, we'll take a stroll in the park.
Yeah. I don't think so. I suggest you stay here and find a job suited to your talents.
Well, what do you mean by that, sir?
Sweep out the office. It's filthy.
He can't say that to me, you know.
No, it's not filthy at all. I swept it only yesterday.
He's made a big mistake, too. He's upset me, you know. He's upset me. You can see it, can't you? He really has upset me. And I'm going to deal with Mr. Steele. And I think I see the way to do it.
Here we are. Lovely cup of char.
Thank you, Mildred.
Oh, you look more cheerful lately. Getting used to Mr. Steele, are you?
We don't aim to get used to him, Mildred. We aim to get rid of him.
But how could you do that?
We had a brilliant idea on last week's hangar job. You see, the plan said yards, but he wanted meters, so it would be more metric, and we had to divide 100 yards long by £3.10 and multiply the hangar by... you explain, Martin.
I suppose there's no harm in your knowing, Mildred, as long as you don't tell a soul.
Uh-huh.
Now, we changed some of the measurements from meters to millimeters.
Go on.
Yes.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, Mildred, it means it's quite... It's, what does it mean, Martin?
Oh, Lonnie, look, I explained to you at the time, too, didn't I? For over an hour I was at it.
Hmm.
It means, Mildred, that they will by now have erected at Snedfield Airport a new hangar 100 yards long and only 2 feet wide.
Our side!
Yes.
And as Mr. Steele insisted that he was doing it, he'll get the blame.
It's a bit of a sneaky trick, though.
No, not at all, not at all. If Steele hadn't been so arrogant, he'd have checked and spotted it.
Sir Gregory'll go mad when he hears about that long, thin hanger. I can't wait to see his face.
Ah, there you are.
Well, I could have waited a little longer.
good afternoon, Sir Gregory.
Oh, cut out the flattery, Lennox Brown.
Oh.
I've just had a call from Snedfield Airport.
I'm sure you have, Sir Gregory.
Two. Have you indeed, sir?
I have, about this new hangar.
I can assure you, Sir Gregory, it has nothing to do with us. No. Nothing to do at all.
Mr. Steele took it right out of our hands. We're not to blame.
Blame? What do you mean? This is a matter for congratulation.
Are you sure, Sir Gregory?
Well, Snedfield are delighted with their long, thin hangar. Just the thing for this rocket they have to look after. 100 yards long and 2 feet wide.
I can't believe it.
Well, they had thought you'd fix the aircraft hangar first, but no doubt Steele felt this had priority. He's really on his toes. Ah, here he is. Come in, my dear chap. Well done. Snedfield are very pleased.
Yeah, well, one does one's best, you know.
Well, your best is good enough for me. I'm glad to know you'll be responsible for sending these Viscounts to America.
Oh, is that the next job? I haven't heard about it.
Oh, the order's in the folder, Rodney. But don't worry about that now. Tomorrow will do. Come and have a spot of lunch at my club.
Oh, very kind of you. I'd be delighted.
No. After you, my dear chap.
I don't think it's going to work.
Well, I wasn't to know they wanted a hangar for some confounded rocket, was I? The fellow has a charmed life. If he fell in a sewer, he'd come up smelling of aftershave.
What's this next job? Can't we fix him on that?
Well, the next job is sending 25 Viscounts to America.
I say, won't that leave the House of Lords a bit short?
Oh. Look, too, Viscount is a kind of aircraft. Just a minute.
Hmm?
If you thought I meant human Viscounts, no, he'd never be so daft, would he?
Well, I never. You mean Mr. Steele's really been and gone and sent 25 British aristocrats to America?
Yes, he packed them off in a plane last Friday. First class, of course.
I can hardly believe it. You think he'd know Viscounts are aeroplanes?
Well, there are Viscount aircraft and human Viscounts, aren't there? You see, the trick was to make that bound of steel think America wanted the latter.
We took the Viscount order out of the aircraft file, put it on Steele's desk next to his copy of Burke's Peerage.
Yes, you know, the book that lists the British nobility.
Luckily, Steele's a great snob. Burke's Peerage is his Bible.
Yes, he's a bit of a Burke himself.
Know how he got 25 Viscounts to go.
Why, you just put up a notice in the House of Lords offering a complimentary joyride with free beer.
I'm surprised Sir Gregory hasn't been in by now.
Oh, didn't you know? He's had a few days in Wales doing a study of British wildlife.
British wildlife?
Yeah, he had Miss Bentwater with him again. He's back today.
Oh, then I think we may hear from him rather soon.
Steele won't wriggle out of this one.
Can you imagine Sir Gregory's reaction? All those old josses from the House of Lords living it up at the taxpayers' expense.
Ah, there you are. Now, I've just had a cable from America.
I'm sure you have, Sir Gregory.
Two. Huh? Keep it. America, eh? Well, I can assure you, Sir Gregory, it has nothing to do with us. Oh. Nothing at all.
Mr. Steele took the American job right out of our hands.
Yes.
Did he? Then sending 25 peers of the realm over there was entirely his doing?
Yes, Sir Gregory. Good Lord. What an awful mistake.
Nonsense. Splendid idea. The PM's delighted.
Delighted?
And the Americans are fascinated. All these distinguished gentlemen riding on the streetcars in their ermine robes and coronets. They're the toast of New York. They're accused at every British tourist office. And this stunt will be an excellent boost for the Viscount aircraft they're getting next week.
You better sit down, man. Your glasses have steamed up again.
Well, I'm most impressed by young Steele. He's... Well, there aren't words to describe it.
There are, Sir Gregory. I've just thought of a couple of new ones.
I gather he's seeing the minister. He'll go a long way, that boy. Oh, and there's a couple of new little jobs for the General Assistance Department.
Huh?
Yes, one for the British Council in this file, and a job for the Home Office in that file. Let Mr. Steele handle both.
Oh, if you say so, sir.
Ah, you feel superfluous, do you? Like a spare cake at a wedding?
Well, I wouldn't have put it quite like that, sir.
Don't worry, there's always a place for you too. In archives at Ballymuckie.
Oh, shall I put the kettle on, sir?
Yes, please, Mildred. Make a nice pot of arsenic. And pour a cup for Mr. Steele.
Is that wise one? We'd be the first suspects.
Oh, I wasn't serious, too.
Oh, good.
But unless something marvellous happens soon, we might have to consider it.
What are these new jobs, sir?
The Home Office want us to finalise arrangements for the annual police display at Earl's Court on Saturday the 6th. Oh, that's tomorrow.
And the British Council have asked us to help this French ballet company. We're to fix them transport for their show at the Albert Hall. That's tomorrow, too.
Something marvellous has just happened.
Well, you've got that happy look you had when Sir Gregory fell downstairs.
I think a little switch is called for here, but there's not much time. Now, I'll go and make the practical arrangements. Two, you find Steele and get his signature on those files so that he's responsible, right?
You are clever, Mr. Lennox Brown, but naughty with it.
Switch? You mean send the ballet people to do the police show and vice versa? But what'll happen?
And now for the rest of the news. The Home Secretary has ordered an inquiry into incidents at Saturday's police display at Earl's Court. The opening display of new police uniforms provoked strong audience reaction. The uniforms turned out to be, for the men, white tights and close-fitting yellow tunics covered with gold spangles, and for police women, short frilly skirts and flesh-coloured skin. There was further uproar during an item billed as a demonstration of unarmed combat by D Division. In this, a policewoman in black tights leapt into the arms of a policeman in harlequin costume. The man, billed as Detective Sergeant Hodge, threw her in the air and caught her by the rostrum. He then pirouetted off the stage. The Prime Minister, who was guest of honour, left the display at this point, apparently believing it was finished, as he was heard to mutter, "This is the end." The next item, described as modern crowd control, featured a chorus of constables in white tutus dragging a troublemaker across the stage by one leg. And as the display continued, a section of the audience began to chant, "Hurrah for the fairy fuzz." The inquiry will start at once. That's the end of the news.
Oh, you don't think we've gone too far, do you?
No, this will fix Steele for good.
And now, the living arts. Critic Ernest Leeper reviews the new ballet premiered at the Albert Hall on Saturday.
Well, you know, I liked it. Yes, I liked it because it was, how can I put it, unusual. The human dilemma, so boldly symbolized by the roar of motorcycles and the wail of police sirens. The black uniforms with silver buttons and the helmets, they all said so much. I loved the simple marching movements in which the males were accompanied by female dancers, quite effectively impersonating Alsatian dogs.
Switch it off, Jim. We've heard enough.
Sir Gregory can't be pleased with any of that.
I hear he's in a filthy temper anyway. He didn't get his usual weekend trip to the coast. He asked Miss Bentwater, but she wouldn't go.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, hello, Sir Gregory. Sorry you didn't get it this weekend.
What?
Your trip to the coast. I'm sorry you didn't get it.
Ah, now, listen, you two.
Yes.
I've just heard from the British Council and the Home Office.
I'm sure you have, Sir Gregory.
Wait a minute. Have you indeed, sir?
Yes, I have. The police display team were put into the Albert Hall for a ballet show, and a dance company took their place.
My word. What a frightful clangor.
It is a clangor, isn't it, Sir Gregory? You are annoyed, aren't you?
Annoyed? I'm livid. Heads are going to roll for this.
Oh, good.
Better get out of the way when Mr. Steele's head rolls. It's a pretty big one.
Steele? What are you talking about? He bears no blame for this. I gather that after his meeting with the minister, he went straight off on a mission.
What? But he signed the files, didn't he, too?
No, I couldn't find him. Does it matter?
Oh, glory.
The fault is entirely yours. And this time you've gone too far. You're out. It's Ballymuckie for both of you.
Sir Gregory, we appeal to you.
You don't. And you never have done. And now I've a chance to get rid of you, I'm going to take it. Mr. Steele can run this office on his own.
Morning, Uncle Gregory. Oh, sorry, I'm back a little late from the weekend.
Ah, it's all right, my boy. It's good that you had a break. Now, from today, you'll run this office alone.
Oh, so soon? I thought it would take another fortnight.
Anyway, you were on a mission for the minister, weren't you?
Yes, he sent me to Brighton for a weekend conference, but all work and no play makes Rodney a dull boy, you know, so I took a young lady with me. Charming creature from the typing pool.
Oh, yes, there are some very pretty fish in that pool.
Yes, an amusing child. She seems to have taken a fancy to me. Unusual name, Daphne Bentwater.
Well, I... What? What did you say?
Miss Bentwater, do you know her?
Know her? She's my... Well, Daphne and I have... we've been every week, if not oftener. For years.
Oh dear. Have I done something out of turn?
Get out! Get out before I throw you out!
Oh, but Uncle Gregory,
Wait, in my office. I'll deal with you in a moment.
Very well.
How dare he? How dare he? The immoral, lecherous rake. Oh, he'll have to go. No, I'll get rid of him at once.
But who'll run the office, sir?
What? Well, Mr. Lennox Brown and Mr. Lamb had better stay on. I may have been a little hasty just now, gentlemen.
Yes, well, never mind, Sir Gregory. We all make mistakes.
What about Mr. Steele, Sir Gregory? You said he should go a long way.
And so he should. Miss Murfin?
Sir?
Make out a railway warrant.
Where to, sir?
Ballymuckey.
Muddling through as the men from the ministry were Richard Murdoch and Derek Giler. Also featured were Norma Ronald, Ronald Baddeley, and John Graham. The program was written by Edward Taylor and John Graham and produced by Edward Taylor.
The Men from the Ministry return next week. For Classic Comedy tomorrow, Patricia Hayes and Liz Fraser join the regulars of Hancock's Half Hour as the boys decide to go wild and impress their respective young ladies by eating al fresco. The feast of plum jam sandwiches and homemade wine doesn't go down terribly well. The picnic tomorrow. Now, this week, Phil Jupitus introduces us to an orchestra that manages to fill their concerts with a unique blend of music and comedy, mainly stemming from the fact that all of its members play ukuleles. In fact, they've become so popular that they even starred in their very own proms concert. But how exactly did the ukulele orchestra come about? Two founder members, Richie Williams and George Hinchcliffe, explain.
I challenged George to play my son's Bluesmith ukulele, which only had two strings on at the time, and he got an amazing tune out of it, as he does on anything he picks up. And the seed of an idea was sown.
And Richie said, that doesn't sound too bad, you're getting a tune out of it. So we wondered whether we could do something with ukuleles. And Kitty had a birthday, and I bought her a ukulele for her birthday. And in fact, everybody who came round to the flat, all our musician friends, had a go on it and said, these are actually quite good, aren't they? Lots of fun. And so we thought, let's do a gig with ukuleles. So it was a back-of-the-envelope idea, and we thought of the name for the band. And then we did a gig in the local pub. Loads of people came, and lots of people said they liked it, so we thought maybe we should carry on with it. Then we did another gig. John Hegley did something with us. And then by the third gig, we got offered a Radio 1 session.
I who have nothing... I who have no one.
When we first started in 1985, we thought it was all risible. Being a pop star was silly. Hardly the job for a sensible human being, let alone a grown adult. The music business seemed to be laughable in a way, so we couldn't take it seriously. But nevertheless, we were musicians and performers, so we wanted to do something. So it seemed that one of the things that we were doing was kind of sidestepping those things.
I'm just a no one with nothing to give you, but oh, I love you.
By about the fifth gig, we were doing a festival. Some of the people who were playing with us at that time were a little bit annoyed because they'd got their